Ladies and gentlemen, mesdames et messieurs, thank you for coming. I won't take up too much of your time, but I thought it would be useful for us to have a quick preview of the ministerial, both this afternoon and tomorrow. This is all on the record, so you can use the words as you will. I will do this in English, but of course, if there's anyone who'd like to ask questions in French, I'm happy to take them in French as well, and we have interpretation. The meeting this afternoon will focus on transformation. This is not a surprise, but it will be a little bit different in character than the usual meeting of defense ministers, NATO defense ministers, when they concentrate on transformation. Usually they are very focused on the nuts and bolts of the immediate requirements of NATO transformation in their own forces and alliance-wide. Today, the Secretary General has asked them to lift their eyes from the immediate issues to look to the longer-term future. As you all know, to get a result 10 to 15 years down the road in defense means you have to take decisions now. And of course, the alliance is changing very much, international security is changing very much, and ministers, both defense and foreign ministers, of course, but defense ministers here today, will want to look at what kind of NATO they want at the end of this 10 to 15 year period, and what decisions, of course, would have to be taken now to get there, and this will have immediate effects on their own armed forces as well, if and when this common vision is shaped. And the kinds of questions they'll be looking at are, for example, what balance do we want between forces that are designed for collective defense or forces that are designed for force projection? What kind of balance do we need between light, mobile forces that are designed to move quickly and then leave, versus stabilization forces that are designed to stay for long periods of time, as we see in Kosovo, as we've seen in Afghanistan as well? There is a whole range, of course, open of options, and it is not a question of choosing one or the other. NATO has to be able to do the full spectrum of activities, but it's a question of balance. And it is very important that defense ministers have a common vision, or at least a broadly common vision, of where they want the alliance to be 10 to 15 years from now. That is what the Secretary General wants to spark in terms of a discussion this afternoon. And I know that defense ministers are very interested in that. I've seen the quotes from Defense Minister Struk, who has certainly come out in support of the Secretary General's idea of having a more political dialogue here in NATO, not just amongst foreign ministers, but also amongst defense ministers. And it's certainly something that the Secretary General has welcomed. They will also discuss this afternoon the NATO Response Force. And this is, for those of you who are not fully familiar with NATO, the transformational tool of the alliance. It is where forces from all allies come together, train to the highest level with the latest doctrine, the latest technology, and for the most demanding missions, as well as missions lower down the spectrum, and also is, of course, designed to be anything from an initial entry force to a stabilization force for a short period of time to performing humanitarian needs. You, I'm sure, have read that the NRF, or elements of both the naval and air components of the NATO Response Force, have been deployed or are being deployed to transport humanitarian supplies from Europe to the United States in response to Hurricane Katrina. So this is something that the NRF has not necessarily done before, but it shows the breadth of things that the NRF can do. The NRF is designed to reach full operational capability next October during an exercise that will take place in Cape Verde. And we are working towards that, but there are, of course, for any kind of operation a year away, there are still shortfalls that need to be met. Ministers will discuss how to meet them, and this will be, of course, part of the regular discussions that defense ministers have. But certainly they will wish to look at the NRF and how to make sure that we can indeed reach full operational capability next year, even as the NRF is performing very important roles today. There will be a reception this evening to which you're all invited, I do believe, for the media. Tomorrow morning, ministers will turn to, let's say, more practical issues, and that is our operations and missions. Afghanistan, obviously, will be very high up on the agenda. This is one of NATO's main priorities, and it is an operation that is evolving very quickly. You all know that we have deployed 2,000 extra troops into Afghanistan for the election period, and they are there. They will be providing security as the elections take place very, very soon now. But there is a second question, and that is, how will NATO's mission evolve into the future? And there are two evolutions that will have to be discussed. One is the military evolution, one is the political evolution. The military evolution is very simple and quite clearly laid out, and that is that NATO will gradually take over responsibilities throughout the country. So the International Security Assistance Force will expand its responsibilities from where it is now in Kabul, the north and the west, to the south and to the east. The force generation for Area South is going very well, and that should move forward. That expansion should move forward in the coming months. I can't give you a number of months, but certainly it is well on track. But one of the issues that has to be discussed, and I know it's being discussed amongst ministers in the press and will be discussed tomorrow morning here, is the relationship between the NATO-led Security Assistance Force and Operation Enduring Freedom, which is at present in the south and in the east. The operations are moving closer together geographically. They will have to develop greater synergy, greater mutual support between them, and ministers will wish to discuss how to move them closer together in a way that works best for both missions and for all allies. So that will certainly be an issue on the table. They will look at Kosovo. Kosovo, too, is a priority for the alliance. We have over 16,000 troops there. And the political situation is evolving very quickly. As I'm sure you know, NATO Ambassador Kai Eide will soon publish his report or present to the UN Secretary General his report on his assessment of where Kosovo is in meeting the standards set by the international community, standards including minority rights, freedom of movement, etc. If his assessment is positive, then the international community will move towards status talks for Kosovo, determining the final political status of Kosovo. Obviously, this is a very quick-changing, rapidly evolving political situation, and for KFOR, we will have to, as an alliance, keep a very close eye on developments, but the mission in KFOR, as it restructures, it is in the process of restructuring to be more mobile, more flexible, more present in the field. We'll keep a close eye on political developments, and ministers will discuss that here today, or here tomorrow as well. Ministers will also discuss the training mission in Iraq. This is a mission that the alliance set up last year. It is going well. The targets that we have and that we are meeting are that the alliance at NATO will train and is training 1,500 Iraqi officers per year. 1,000 inside the country and around 500 outside of the country. The evolution in this mission is the following. In a few weeks, NATO will open a training academy near Baghdad where we can centralize and indeed enhance our training of Iraqi security forces, particularly Iraqi officers. The numbers will not change. It will still be 1,000 inside the country, 500 outside of the country. But the training academy will allow us to improve and focus our training efforts. So ministers will wish to discuss not only this immediate step, that is opening of this facility, but also wish to look to the future and how they want the training mission to evolve. Finally, let me discuss, let me mention also that there will be a discussion of terrorism. This goes, I think, almost without saying. Anytime NATO defense ministers come together, they must discuss terrorism as it is a threat that they all, or that we all face in all of our countries. NATO does do many things in many different ways to combat terrorism, from operations such as the one in Afghanistan to prevent Afghanistan from once again becoming a haven for terrorism, to our operation in the Mediterranean, Operation Active Endeavor, to which Russia and Ukraine will soon provide support in the form of ships and countries from the southern Mediterranean will also provide support to the development of technologies. For example, technologies to defend wide-bodied aircraft against shoulder-fired missiles, technologies to protect ships and ports from terrorist attack, technology to protect helicopters from terrorist attack. So there will be a discussion also of the technological improvements that are being made, and of course, enhanced intelligence sharing amongst allies. This is already taking place, but ministers will want to discuss how to take it one step further. This, in essence, will cover the NATO agenda, the NATO-only agenda. But in the afternoon, or sorry, over lunch, there will also be a meeting of the NATO-Russia Council. Russian Defense Minister Sergei Ivanov will be here and will have a working lunch with his NRC, NATO-Russia Council colleagues. And the 27 defense ministers will want to discuss together a range of issues relating to enhancing their practical cooperation. And one of those areas will be, again, focused on Afghanistan. There will be discussion amongst the 27 ministers of enhanced cooperation amongst NRC countries to help prevent the flow of narcotics from Afghanistan. This is obviously a threat that we all face. 90%, I think 90% plus, of the heroin that is on the market, the world market today, has its origins in Afghanistan. Much of it ends up on our streets and in our schools, and it is obviously incumbent on all of our nations to try to help Afghanistan overcome this challenge. Let me jump back, because I forgot one thing that I do need to mention about Afghanistan. I should have mentioned it when I was discussing the operations. Ministers will also wish to discuss the long-term future of NATO's engagement in Afghanistan beyond the elections. I mentioned the military evolution. I skipped over the political evolution. The process that began in Bonn, which laid out a framework and a roadmap for the international community's engagement in Afghanistan, will come to an end as this electoral process comes to an end in Afghanistan. That does not mean that the international community can go home. On the contrary, the Afghan government continues to need support from NATO, but also from the United Nations, very much from the European Union, from the international donor community, from the non-governmental organizations that are there. So we need, as an international community, to have an extended roadmap, a new roadmap, for how the international community can work together in support of the Afghan government, in support of their priorities, including, of course, counter-narcotics. There must be an essential role, of course, for the United Nations. There is a critical role for the European Union, and there is a very important role for NATO. No one organization can do what needs to be done on their own. This has to be a team effort in support of the Afghan lead, and ministers will certainly discuss here today what role NATO can play as part of this international team effort into the future. Of course, as I mentioned, this will be an Afghan lead, but NATO, of course, will have its own role to play in our own position as this international team is in a sense, put together for the post-Bonn process. Let me return quickly to the NATO-Russia Council. I mentioned that there will be a discussion amongst the 27 NRC ministers on combating the flow of narcotics from Afghanistan. There will also be discussion of enhancing our cooperation when it comes to, for example, training, when it comes to interoperability. Russia is setting up a peacekeeping brigade that will be interoperable with NATO, and alliance defense ministers will want to talk with their Russian colleague about how to make sure our military forces can work together for potential future peacekeeping operations. We'll also want to look at enhanced training, joint training. You all remember, because it was very recent, that the Russian submariners were trapped in their submarine underwater, and it was the United Kingdom that came and helped the Russian Navy to rescue them. The commander, the British commander of that ship, had very recently trained with the Russians precisely on submarine search and rescue in the NRC context, and it was training that he himself said had proven valuable when it came time to work with his Russian colleagues to try to rescue these sailors. This is the kind of thing that we want to build on. We have, of course, arrangements with the Russians on cooperative airspace management. In other words, how we work together in the event that a terrorist takes control of an aircraft. We have arrangements with the Russians to work together in that eventuality. And there are many others, many other examples that I can give. So ministers will want to build on this as we move forward. They will also want to discuss implementing the Russian decision, one which NATO welcomes, to contribute to Operation Active Endeavor. As I mentioned, Russia will send two ships, I do believe, to work with Operation Active Endeavor, and they are in the process now of familiarizing themselves with each other, and that should happen at some point in 2006. That, in essence, is the are the highlights of what I think will be the highlights of the meetings this afternoon and tomorrow. I am ready to take your questions. Do we have microphones here? Thanks.
Okay. Mark John from Reuters. James, you mentioned the shortfalls in the NRF. Could you quantify exactly what shortfalls is experiencing at the moment, and what kind of threat this this carries for the the target of full operability?
Well, the current manifestation of the NRF is doing what it needs to do. So there's no problem with shortfalls when it comes to the NRF as it is. What we're talking about, of course, is generating forces for the NRF rotation for next year. Right now, I believe some of the things that allies are looking for include strategic lift and communications equipment. I have absolutely no doubt that these necessary capabilities will be generated in plenty of time for full operational capability. But it is normal, and you're very familiar with the way NATO works, it takes time to generate these kinds of forces. I should mention that one of the issues surrounding the NRF is one of the larger issues which the Secretary General will wish to discuss with defense ministers, and that is funding. As it stands now, for those of you who don't follow NATO every day, the vast bulk of funding for NATO operations lie with the nation that contributes the forces. The costs lie where they fall is the principle that we that we follow almost exclusively, which means nations that contribute a helicopter have to buy the helicopter, send the helicopter to where it's required, pay for its use, and bring it back. One of the issues that the Secretary General will bring up, and it has implications potentially for the long-term future of the funding of the NRF, but also more broadly for NATO, will be whether or not common funding, in other words, a pool of money to which all nations contribute, can be more widely applied to NATO operations, simply to some key enablers or key capabilities that are used by everyone, which could ease the burden on individual nations, particularly smaller nations, when they wish to contribute to an operation. I can give you an example. If a country like my own, Canada, is the first to arrive in a country like Afghanistan and it sets up a hospital that everybody uses, could there be some common funding applied to that to help ease the burden on the initial country that's going in? Another area of discussion may well be whether or not we want, as an alliance, to acquire for NATO, to be NATO-owned and operated, what are called key enablers, for example, perhaps tactical helicopters, or a small capability for strategic airlift. There are discussions underway. In the case of strategic airlift, there's a German-led initiative which is moving forward quite quickly. But there will be a discussion of more flexible uses of NATO budgets to see if we can help balance the financial burdens in a way that demonstrates more solidarity and indeed helps to remove some of the log jams that sometimes inhibit countries from going forward. Leo?
James,
microphone, just for translation.
Without going into a philosophical discussion on where NATO should be in 10 to 15 years, I'm assuming the Secretary General, and apparently he's prepared a text, has some fairly precise ideas. Could you give us some insight as to where he thinks NATO should be in 10 to 15 years? And I ask that in the context of the fact that many countries are reluctant to have NATO be the, as they say, the gendarme of the world, you know, the world police cop. So could you give us some insight on that?
To a certain extent, I can. And obviously, I would suggest that you ask this question to him this afternoon or tomorrow morning, because I can't get out ahead of him. What I can say is he certainly agrees with those countries that do not want NATO to be the gendarme du monde, and he would say, and will say, I'm sure, if you ask him the question, that NATO has neither the ambition nor the financial means nor the military capability to be the gendarme du monde. So that is not something that he would propose nor would he support as in any way realistic. In terms of what he has put in front of ministers, it is principally presenting to them the same kind of range of options that I discussed with you earlier today. In other words, what will be the balance? What should be the balance, for example, between stabilization and collective defense forces? And of course, these kinds of issues are the ones that ministers need to discuss. So in terms of his own personal views, I think you should ask him, but certainly the paper that he has put in front of the ministers has helped to sort of crystallize for them what the various positions are. These are not questions of either or, they are questions of proportion and balance.
Hans Morris, German Public Radio. I wonder if you could enlighten us what is the status now on the debate or even maybe decision-making or pre-decision-making on the combination, the combined two operations in Afghanistan under one military command structure, and just also to get the latest figures. How many troops are there now in Afghanistan, including those 2,000 you just mentioned? And is there further reinforcement in this middle and long term an option? Thank you.
Yes. As you know, this is an informal meeting of defense ministers, which means in terms of decision-making, no decisions are required here today. So you should not expect any decisions on command structures or anything else. A fundamental NATO principle, and one on which all nations agree, is unity of command. That is, that a mission should have unity of command. Now, within that broad principle, there are many ways to do it, and that is what's under discussion amongst nations. All nations agree that ISAF and OAF need to work more closely together, that there should be greater synergy between the two missions, and that when NATO takes over operations throughout the country, that there must be unity of command. Now, within that, that is where the details need to be worked out, and different countries have different visions. But I would not suggest, as I have seen in some press reports, that there is much controversy over this. I think there are broadly shared visions that this makes sense. Now, you've heard discussions that there could be two task forces under one commander, and these are all options that are out on the table. So I don't want to prejudge discussions amongst ministers. But what I would suggest is that there is a broadly shared agreement that these two missions should move closer together, and that there should be, when ISAF takes over full operations in the country, there should be unity of command. Oh, I'm sorry, numbers. There are over 10,000 soldiers in ISAF now. This is with the election surge. I have heard discussions. Now, sorry, 2,000 or so of those soldiers will be withdrawn after the election period. But the numbers will start to go up again as NATO expands into the south. There are, for example, provincial reconstruction teams and indeed other forces that are moving into the south, including from my own country, which now are under Operation Enduring Freedom. But when NATO expands into the south, they will come under a NATO banner. So I don't have, and I'm not sure, I don't have precise numbers on what that will be, and I'm not sure it's clear yet how much the numbers will go up. But certainly many of the forces that are in the south now under OEF will go under ISAF when ISAF expands to the south. Sorry, Paul.
James, Paul Ains from Associated Press. How soon after this weekend do you expect NATO to be able to reach an agreement on the synergies between the two forces in Afghanistan?
Well, that's a very good question, and I am afraid I couldn't give timelines. I do know, as I mentioned to you already, that the force generation for Stage 3, which took a major step forward in June at a force generation conference, June or July, is going very well, and many nations, as I just mentioned, are already moving their forces south in anticipation of ISAF expanding into the south. The extent to which decisions need to be taken on command arrangements before that happens is one of the things which ministers, I'm sure, will discuss today. But I couldn't give you timelines, I'm sorry.
One last question on the training mission in Iraq. You said in a couple of weeks. Are we talking...
In the coming weeks.
In a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we talking... Can you be at least more precise by saying... Before the end of the month, or are we talking October? Just to have an idea. Will there be any talk? Just give us a rapid overview of the of how many trainers and instructors there are, just from my memory.
Certainly before mid-October, this facility will be open and up and running. There are already people there refurbishing it. I visited with the Secretary General, of course, many months ago, and it was already starting to take shape. In terms of trainers, I would want to confirm this number. So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to... I don't want to say a bêtise in front of cameras, so I will come back to you on this question. I want to check it.
Shada Islam from DPA. James, you talked about a NATO role in a post-Bonn effort for Afghanistan. Can you give us an idea of what kind of a role you're thinking of? Will this be, and what kind of political intonations will that have? Thank you.
Well, I can give you a broad outline, and that is, as the situation in Afghanistan changes politically and in a security sense, so will have to change the roles of the international organizations that are there. The Afghan government will be fully formed, I presume, in just a few weeks, with a parliament and a president. And their army is being trained at a very rapid rate and taking on greater and greater responsibilities. The president is deploying what they call Kandaks, which are basically battalions, more and more out into the regions, and they're playing a very positive role. The police is also being trained in ever greater numbers and taking on ever greater roles. So the security role for international organizations has to change. The challenge is also changing. Clearly, the focus both of the Karzai government and of the international community is looking at narcotics very much. And how can we, as an international community, support the Afghan efforts to tackle narcotics? The UN has been in the lead on this in one sense, and the G8, the UK, has been in the lead for the G8 in the counter-narcotics effort as well. NATO provincial reconstruction teams have played a supporting role that is in their mandate simply by providing information, but they have not played an active role in the actual counter-narcotics effort. So with all of this in mind, changing security landscape, changing security tasks, changing political structure, and the end, as I say, of the roadmap that was set out in Bonn, clearly a new discussion needs to be had. What will the UN do? What will the EU do? What will NATO do? And what does the Afghan government want now in this new environment? This is what we need to work out together. It needs to be an Afghan-led process supported directly by the United Nations and with the other representatives of the international community playing their part, neither taking too much of the lead nor walking away. We all have to stay and do our part.
James, still in Afghanistan. Can you tell us when you're planning, when you want to start and when you want to complete Stage 3 and Stage 4? And second question regarding synergy. I mean, can you give us maybe more details on the options on the table, apart from saying it's a question of balance? And can you give us a bit more details about Yul-Hating? And
In terms of timelines, they really are not clear. And it's not my position to speculate what ministers will do, because of course it is up to them. As I say, stage three preparations are going well. I can foresee the real possibility of a decision on stage three being taken in the coming months, but I don't know how many months that will be. Of course, NATO hopes to move as quickly as possible. That is in our operational plan to take over responsibilities throughout the country, but these very important questions, like the one that you just raised, need to be worked out. And they are, of course, not just technical, but political questions as well, the relationship between the two operations. I will give you one example that has already been public of a potential option, because this was in the Wall Street Journal, so I'm not revealing any secrets, and it is only one of the options that was considered. And that is being considered, but the one option could be to have two separate task forces, one that does stability operations, like the provincial reconstruction teams, another one that does the more robust counter-terrorist operations, both under a dual-hatted commander that he or she himself or herself would be under the ISAF commander. So you would have an overall unity of command at the very top, and then below that a dual-hatted commander who would have dual responsibilities for two separate operations within that overall unity of command. As I say, this is one option that has been considered. There are others, but this gives you an idea of the kind of thing that that ministers will be discussing. That's as far as I'll go on this.
James, on the same issue. When you're in Afghanistan, it's quite clear that the distinction between the ISAF forces and the OEF forces, that they have ISAF written on the side of their vehicles in big letters, they have ISAF patches. How would that troops with ISAF written on their shoulders and ISAF written on their trucks be doing the combat exercises, or would there be a new name for the combat force? How would that work in terms of the sort of labeling of the force down there?
That's an interesting question. I've never heard it asked. So I don't think I can give you a good answer to that question. I think it'll be worked out in later details, but I don't have an answer. I don't think it's even been, at least not to me, it has not been yet raised. Thank you very much.